You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
Welcome to Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. And boy, am I excited today. I really had something that kind of got in my craw this week. I read that Virginia is moving to eliminate all accelerated math courses for all students before 11th grade. Okay, so all elementary, all middle school, and then your freshman and sophomore students will not have access to any accelerated math courses as part of a equity-focused based plan, an equity-based plan. So that, I guess what they're trying to do is create a level playing field for all students. So I'm just appalled by it. Just like you said, Linda, earlier, there is so much wrong. There is so much wrong with this. Okay. Hey, welcome to Ladies of Liberty. I'm starting again. Hey, welcome to Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. This is Judy Moran, Linda Martinelli, and my friend Becky Kolmainen. And ladies, today, the item I have for us today is really getting under my craw. I'm appalled by it. I really want to sound off about it. It's the fact that Virginia, the state of Virginia, is moving towards eliminating all accelerated math courses for students up to the 11th grade, okay, as part of an equity-focused plan. So their plan is to eliminate all accelerated math programs. Any program that is not your basic math will not be offered to students until they reach the 11th grade, all right? Until they're a junior in high school will they be introduced to any sort of accelerated math program. And they're saying the premises of this is that it's not fair for minority students. They're saying that minority students are apparently, by doing this, they're saying that they're apparently not good in math, which is amazing to me. That's so not true. They're going to eliminate all acceleration prior to the 11th grade. This isn't an exaggeration, nor does there appear to be any discretion in how local districts implement this. So they're not telling them how to do it. They're just saying it can't be available to these students. All sixth graders will take foundational concept six. All seventh graders will take foundational concept seven. It's just the foundational concepts that they can teach their students.
Well, unfortunately, so, Judy, that's not the only place they're doing this. They're looking at doing this in on the left coast to Washington, Oregon, California, where they do say basically the same thing, that mathematics is racist. And it makes no sense at all, because what you're saying is that these children of color are not smart enough to do the same math as white people, so it's racist. And that's not true at all, because some of our greatest mathematicians in history were people of color. And one in particular was a woman. I don't recall her name, but she...
Catherine Johnson.
Is that okay? And she developed, if it's the same woman that we're talking about, she developed the ability, the foundation that now today sends us up into space. There are so many, you could just Google mathematicians of color or Black mathematicians. There are so many. And the truth is that all people, okay, my husband is white. He's a brilliant criminologist, but he can't do math to save his life. You know, I mean, everybody is different. God gave each of us different gifts, and it has nothing to do with the color of your skin. Those gifts are there or not there, regardless of the color of your skin. So we can't dumb down the people that excel in anything, whether it's math or literature or English, or it doesn't matter what people excel in. Everybody excels in something. And those gifts should be fostered and nurtured and allowed to grow. And that's not what we're doing. We're saying, no, because they can't do it, you can't do it. And it's the same thing that they're saying in the voting, say in Georgia. They're trying to say that people of color are too stupid to go out and get an ID. And I reject that. That's not true. So to do this to our students there in Virginia, and to do it in the other states that I talked about, and take these subjects away and say what they're saying, actually, what they have said is that in math, you know, when you say 2 and 2 is 4, getting that answer of 4 is white supremacist, because getting the right answer is white supremacist. I don't even get it.
You know, I'm right there with you, Linda. It's so absurd. I can't even believe that this has gotten this far. Truthfully, you're exactly, I believe, so spot on when you're talking about the problem of this is dumbing down the problem. This is not the problem. The problem is they're not fixing what's really wrong. They're just saying, like you just said, well, if they can't do it, nobody's going to do it, at such an enormous cost to individuals, to future careers for people, future companies, businesses, the nation. It's so far reaching. The ramifications of doing this will be taking our nation backwards academically to an abhorrent degree. When you look at places like Japan, and I know for decades I have heard our country compared to Japan, specifically regarding their mathematics program. Within that program, according to what I am reading right now, it's actually called Japan Math. They state that in Japan, educators believe learning math is no different from learning basic social skills. Both are necessary in everyday life, and both should be as natural as saying hello. Now, I am not a math person. I never have done well with math, and my left brain is far sleepier than my right brain. But I know that I know that I know that math is foundational, fundamental, and absolutely necessary, and to inhibit people from reaching beyond just basic math skills. Well, and this sounds dramatic, it will truly lead to some serious, serious results and the downfall of so much. It's just limitless and sad.
We will be completely left behind as a nation. We will.
And why do we have to cater always in America to the lowest common denominator? Why don't we cater to the people that excel at things, and if necessary, put them in special classes? I know when I went to school, we had classes for people that excelled in math, it was mostly in math, but we had classes just for those people. And the ones who couldn't excel in math, they took the basic math and they took the regular classes. Why can't we do that? Why do we have to dumb down people and stunt their growth, and thereby stunt America's growth, to cater to the lowest common denominator so that they don't feel bad? I can't play basketball like a lot of these Black women can play. So should they not be playing?
You know, this is so absurd. I don't know how it's gotten this far. I mean, the people in particular, we're talking about Virginia with this article, but how has this reached this point? I mean, are the people not saying something out of fear or ambivalence? I don't understand, because this is such a common sense, blatant, stupid thing.
I'm trying to wrap my brain around the why. So why, or what is it that they're trying to achieve by doing this? So I ask myself, why would they do that? So if they're doing it to even, they're saying to even the playing field, or to not let a certain part of the community feel left behind, so that everybody's doing the same thing, so that they, as they grow up, they don't look at themselves as less than. I'm not sure. Or if they're trying to say that more white children, or more, you know, children who are not of color, are in these gifted programs, so we're going to eliminate the gifted programs and then everyone will be doing the same. And I'm going to tell you that what will happen is that these gifted children are going to go to other schools. They are going, their parents will go, they will make sacrifices, and they will put them in a private school where they will be able to express themselves, where they will be able to excel, and they'll get the instruction they need. And so I think that it will completely diminish the whole result that they're looking for. And I, you know, is it fair? I don't know. Life is not fair. I know that. Life is not fair. But the minute you start to eliminate these things, for instance, I mean, the whole, so you've got, you've got our tax situation, right? So Linda, you're in Texas. You used to live in California, right? There's this huge exodus from California, because they're trying to, you know, tax people. Really, it's the middle class. They're going to say it's the wealthy, but it's the middle class that they're taxing. And so people are leaving California, and they're leaving New York in droves to states where they have a chance, right? Like Florida, like Texas. And it's just not going to work. It's just not going to work. I think it's a backfire completely.
Well, one would hope, but this is, like I said, this is not new. And in New York City, here's an example. There's a father who just pulled his daughter out of the Brearley School after 7 years, because, which is an all-girls private academy. He paid something like $54,000 a year to send his daughter there, because their program was trying to make her feel guilty about her skin color, and she's white. Mm-hmm. So he addressed it with the school several times, and they won't make a change. So he took his daughter out. That parent is doing the right thing for his daughter. But so many parents don't pay attention to what's happening in their children's school that you wonder if they even know. The point to this, and you asked this earlier, and I'm going to throw my two cents in here. The point is that our progressives in our government, and not just in our government, in our schools, the people that have infiltrated our government, our schools, our businesses over the last 60 years that want a more socialistic society, one of the biggest things that you do to create a society, a socialist society, is to create class warfare. And that's exactly what they are doing, is they are making us feel guilty for being one color or the other. We as a nation, before President Obama came in, we were doing just fine on race, but he came in and made race an issue. And now it's being even more blown up by Joe Biden. I'm horrified by the things that they say. America knows that what they're saying is not right, but we're standing back. And what it's going to take in this situation is parents like this man in New York to take their kids out and to go and argue. There's another case that I don't remember the state, but that a coach went three times to the principal and talked about the critical race theory that they were trying to teach in school and how wrong and in history class. So it's supposed to be a history class for, you know, like ancient history. And instead they're teaching critical race. And he complained about it. And he was the football coach at that school and he lost his job. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there is coming head to head. It's got to be that parents speak up and do something and say something and make this change happen and don't let them get away with it and don't be coward and don't be quiet. And the last thing I'll say is that parents still have all the power to teach their kids in their home and they need to use it and do it and tell them that the school is not always teaching them the correct things.
It's so damaging to our society, to our culture, to our nation. I think that these programs are specifically designed to separate us, to create that class warfare, they're not even evening the playing field as they claim they're trying to do. They're just separating us more and more and more. And that's goes back to just what you said. The whole Marxist theory is to create class warfare, and to have people become dissatisfied with their lives, and to only focus on the negative and what they don't have, rather than looking at what America truly was built on. That through your own inertia, through your own initiative, through your own hard work, regardless of the God you believe in, the color of your skin, all people are created equal. And yes, absolutely. I believe that obviously there's been problems with the whole situation with slavery. And yet we as a nation realized how horrible slavery was. You should never, ever own another person. And we abolished that. And we stood up. And that was really because of the Christian movement that was occurring, you know, understanding that God loves all people and wants all people to use their gifts to make a better world, to love one another. And yet, yes, we have problems, and men dominated women for the longest time. Yes, it happened all over the place. And there are still instances where race and sexism occurs, for sure. But I don't believe that it is widespread. I wonder if the actions of one of a certain man, right, if he does something horrible to somebody who is black or something horrible to a woman, is it just because he's a jerk, or is he racist, or is he misogynistic? I'm not sure. I don't, you know, you really have to get to the root of what's driving his behavior. I just believe that there is a revolution happening right now. And I think that we're being infiltrated, and that there is a force out there that's trying to separate the American people and encourage us to war against each other rather than working together.
Five incredible years, and we're just getting started. Well, they say time flies when you're having fun. Well, it also flies by when you're on a mission of love. Love of country, that is. Well, our goal is to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. You can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. AmericaOutloud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Don't miss an episode of the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Subscribe to the podcast. And for the latest news and inspiration, join us back at AmericaOutloud.com.
Hey, ladies, I have something on my mind that I want to talk about because this just really, really bothers me. Now, the way that I'm going to present this is what has brought about my feelings about this. And I know we can talk about this a little bit, but I'm going to get to my point in a minute in hearing and reading about the fatal shooting of Micaiah, and I'm not exactly sure I'm pronouncing this correctly, but Micaiah Bryant in Ohio, the teenage girl that was killed recently. It was the actual act of her being killed, that video that I believe came from the body cam of an officer, has been put out on social media for any and all to view. And that act right there really has me heart sick. And it has me terrified for the future of our country. If we can casually, I'm not saying that it's done casually yet. We have the potential for this to become casual. But if we can release video footage of human beings being killed so that people can watch them whenever they want to, however many times they would like to, this opens the door for people to, yes, become informed, but also to witness something that I can't really even find a word for, inexcusable, atrocious, evil, horrible. It's a death. It's a murder. It's a death. We'll just call it a killing of another human being, no matter the circumstances. Have we reverted back to the times of the Roman Colosseum, where we have become eager to see blood? If we're anxious to look for footage of people being killed, we're creating such an desensitized and insensitive social group of people. Are we even people at that point? Were the Romans that watched people being eaten alive by lions actual? Do you have human souls? I don't understand the desire to watch another human being be killed. I believe all of this could happen without this footage being released. Enough people who hold the future of whether someone would go to jail or justice, enough people are watching this. The whole world doesn't need to watch that. The way that people become desensitized to killings so that it doesn't affect them so much emotionally, we have enough of that through video games. We have some of the most violent video games that have ever even existed from the start of when video games began. I don't remember when that was. But between video games and movies and other forms of media, we watch a lot of murders, a lot, to the point where we do become desensitized at some point. I still don't like watching some war movies and other things where there's graphic, gory, bloody violence. But are we reaching a point where seeing something like this on Facebook is okay? And it's not going to bother us. What's going to happen to this country if that becomes the case? Because this isn't going to stop. This is just going to keep coming. I think people are hungry for it. And that kind of makes me sick.
Wow, I think you're right. And I never really thought about it that way. So it's a sobering thought, Becky, to kind of digest everything that you just said. I always look at it in a different way, but the way that you portrayed this is really an important thing for us to think about. Because one thing that I noticed at some of these recent events and also in Chicago and some of the other areas that have just huge crime rates. And it's not about police officers shooting people. It's about anybody killing anybody. And people were standing around with children next to them, holding their hand. And the children were probably 3-4 years old. And the parent couldn't extricate themselves and look away and walk away. They had to see everything that was happening, and therefore their child was seeing everything that was happening. And you're right, it does desensitize us. And I think that your point about the video games is and movies is absolutely right. I can't stand watching movies like the war movies or the scary movies where they kill people. I don't want to watch those movies. When I go to a movie, I want to see something that entertains me and not horrifies me. And having been an officer, I've seen my share of dead bodies. I've seen my share of the trauma that people cause to one another. But I don't want to see it. That's kind of a separate life. And I don't want to see it in my everyday life. And yet, our media, our newspapers, our magazines, our social media, and our television are kind of almost glorifying these videos and playing them over and over and over. And the death of this young girl is disturbing on a few levels because of the media already determining that an officer is at fault, the president's office already determining that racism was involved. And what everybody can see with their own eyes is that an officer who was called walked up on a scene and there was a struggle and somebody with a knife, and it was a very rapidly evolving situation. It was uncertain, it was deadly, and that officer took, in my opinion, the appropriate action. My opinion obviously is not the same as a lot of the media's opinion, who are leaving a lot of the facts out about the knife. But the fact there is that, what about that other girl's life that was saved? And nobody's talking about that. And that really bothers me. That's kind of the perspective that I see that case from that you were talking about, because when we have people like LeBron James tweeting out the picture of the officer, and this is just horrific that people have judged before there's an investigation. And my question for this is, what would you expect that officer to do? He was out doing his job, got a call that somebody is trying to stab somebody, gets there and sees that. If you see the video, you can clearly see that somebody was going to be hurt or be killed in that confrontation. And it was one girl or the other. So the aggressor was the one who ended up being killed. And all this baloney that we see of the backseat driving, the second guessing, is absolutely wrong. And I think that they should leave these things off the news so that the public can't, first of all, damage a jury pool, and secondly, just cause all this misinformation in our society, which is damaging our society just so terribly and making people hate the people that protect us. I am quite sure that the mother of the girl that was not stabbed was pretty glad those officers showed up. So I don't know. There's so many lessons here that and your point is so well taken that there's more than one lesson here. It's just really sad all the way around.
And you know, what you mentioned, Linda, about LeBron James and his tweets or social media, when these videos are shown like this, it puts some of the power into the people's hands as to the way the news is skewed. And that just exacerbates this whole problem, because once, it's not like it's shown just once. When President Kennedy was assassinated, they had footage of the parade up until the point of the bullet impact, I believe. Since then, I'm sure you can Google the actual incident, but there was some decorum, let's just say, for media in, if you want to say, protecting the people from having to watch someone be killed. But this is almost a free-for-all now that this is out. And it's not just this. This isn't the only one that's out. There's so many murders that are now, like, all of a sudden, these social media places are saying, it's okay. It's okay. It's all right. You know what's going to happen. Let's just let it happen. What do you think, Judy, with kids?
Well, couple, I have a couple thoughts. Whatever happened to honoring the dead, to burying the dead with dignity, with protecting the people who cannot protect themselves, right? So the dead cannot protect themselves. They have no voice any longer. And we are saying that, you know, anybody can watch the, you know, the death or the killing or the way. I don't understand. I mean, we have all of these laws and protecting our medical privacy, right? No one can call, or they're not supposed to be able to call and find out anything about me medically whatsoever. We have to sign all these HIPAA acts and everything, but a person can actually pass away and it can be videoed and then distributed throughout social media. I am appalled by it. And it just shows the, how our society has become degraded. We have no morals. We have no boundaries. We have no honor. There's no honor any longer. I'm appalled by it. I remember when I was little, I was born in 1964. When I was little, I lived in Detroit, and we were experiencing the race riots of Detroit. Which was such a sad, sad situation. I understand how angry and how oppressed Blacks were in the city of Detroit, and my heart bleeds for them. And yet, as I watched them become so angry and destroyed the whole city of Detroit, which in turn destroyed their own homes, their own businesses. And Detroit really never, ever recovered. And it's a shame, because Detroit is such a magnificent city and had so much potential. But I remember as a little girl, my mom, we were driving, I think to go pick up my dad at the airport, and we drove through a neighborhood, and she saw up ahead there were police cars. And I remember her saying, "Lay down in the back of the car and I don't want you to look at anything." She was shielding us, my sister and I, from seeing the horror of the situation. And later on, she said that someone had died, and she said, "We need to honor the dead. And I don't want you to see that horror either. You're too little, your little brain can't handle it." And that doesn't happen anymore in our world. There's very little shielding. There's very little honor. And so I agree with you. I do have, you know, the other thing that's really driving me nuts, and I'm asking myself, and I'm like, why isn't anybody else asking this? So LeBron James tweets a picture of the officer, and he writes, "You're next," to him. So how many hundreds of thousands of followers does LeBron James
have? He has 50 million, Judy, 50 million followers.
So he is inciting his 50 million followers to go after this police officer. He's saying, "You're next," and him and his tribe of, you know, people, right, are supposed to go after this particular, this police officer. And with no information about what really happened in that situation, I look at that and I look at Maxine Waters, right, before the conviction of Chauvin, right? And she's telling her followers and her constituents to get up in their faces. And she is inciting violence, right? She's inciting violence. And I look at President Trump, who they tried to impeach him for those things. And his whole social media presence was completely wiped out. And yet I look at Maxine Waters and I look at LeBron James and nothing is being done whatsoever. Nobody's listening. Is anybody listening? Am I in the Twilight Zone? I don't understand.
Well, I think conservatives are in the Twilight Zone because they're the ones who are, I mean, we're just being canceled, and that's the issue. So we have to speak up and we have to get on to social media sites that are more conservative. And President Trump is supposed to be developing one that should be out in a couple of months. And I'll be joining that because I want to have my say, but to look at the vitriol that I see out there on social media, on Twitter and some other places, I can't abide by it. And that goes to Becky's point, where the things that are being said on Twitter are, I mean, they're horrific things to say, and they do incite violence, and they don't even have to be true things. You can just throw it out there and a percentage of people will believe you. And this is a huge problem. I so agree that LeBron James and Maxine Waters should absolutely be canceled on all of their social media. Maxine Waters should be censured. She should be kicked off of her seats that she works on in Congress, but they did nothing. And Nancy Pelosi backed her play. Yet the I don't remember her name, but the young blonde girl that's new to the Congress, they took her seats away for things that she said before she was ever even elected, which were nowhere near what Maxine Waters says. So there's a double standard here. But, you know, the points are so well taken on this issue and all issues like it that we have become desensitized. And that's a problem for us and for our children, I think.
According to CNN, LeBron James deleted his tweet and said it was, quote, being used to create more hate. How is that tweet not intended to create hate?
Listen to the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together. And we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Welcome back to Ladies of Liberty. And I had an experience that I want to tell you guys about. This affected me And it happened a few years ago, but I still think about it because it bothered me. My husband and I used to have a second home up in the mountains in California. And one day we were up there and the lady across the street, they had a beautiful mountain home, one of the nicest ones up there. And they actually owned two homes in town there. And she was having a sale, like an estate sale. And my husband and I said, oh, what's going on over there? So we went over and we chatted with her. She was selling every single thing in her home. I mean, every cup, every dish, every piece of furniture, her vacuum cleaners, appliances, you name it, she was selling it. And we were very much taken aback. And we said, what is going on? And she was not only doing it at that house, but at her other house as well. And what had happened was her husband and she had been very well off, raised all their kids there. Kids were grown and she had stayed home with the kids. And the husband owned a business and she'd never had anything to do with the business. She was a housewife and she took care of the kids and she, was very social, right? She did the clubs and the ladies clubs and all of those things that women of some means will do with her free time now that her kids were gone. Well, her husband passed away very suddenly and she had no idea. He had no health insurance, no life insurance at all, none. He had let it lapse. He never had her pay a bill, write a check, do anything. He took care of everything. And she, long story short, she lost everything because all of the business, which she'd never been involved in, she had no idea how to run. So the business quickly went away and she had nothing. I mean, literally nothing in her life and had to sell all of her possessions. And she was going to go move in with one of her daughters. And it really struck me that women really need to take care of their financial health as well as their physical health, that we need to know what the finances are in our marriage or our relationship. Whenever you are sharing finances with somebody that you are living with, then you need to have a say and you need to have a knowledge of where the bank accounts were. She wasn't on anything. She wasn't on the bank accounts, nothing. So, I mean, it was just a huge, huge mess. And the bottom line being that she lost every single thing that she had. And I think that it's really important that women think about this for themselves because in her case, her husband died. She didn't get divorced, but you could also get divorced and you don't know what's going on in the bank accounts and you don't know how to pay a bill and you don't know what you owe on your mortgage and you don't know what your husband makes and, you know, all of those things. And it's surprising, but there are so many women that still live that way, certainly less than used to, because we have a lot of single women now who have to manage their finances. But I want to talk about that because I just think it's so important that we empower ourselves to understand how to protect ourselves should our spouse or significant other pass away, should they leave us, should you get divorced. You need to know exactly what your situation is.
Boy, do I agree with you. I really, really do. I remember friends of mine, their husbands handled everything, right? Mine, not so much. Okay. So I somehow, me, the creative, artistic ADD girl, got stuck with handling all the finances, right? I was never a math girl. And it's difficult for me to sit still and concentrate on paperwork for very long. I'd rather be flitting about like a butterfly, creating things or being super social. And I remember kind of grumbling about it. And yet now, as I listen to your story, first of all, I'm grateful that I have a complete understanding of not only our personal finances, but our business finances as well. And understanding that, I mean, we absolutely as women need to have a financial footprint that's our own, not just attached to our husbands. And for instance, I'm very excited. Yay. I bought a new car last weekend, a new one that smells new and everything. I was very excited about it. And as I went through the financing options, we went to our credit union, and even though my credit, I make a great salary. I have a fabulous job. I'm part owner of our company. My credit is like in the 700s. Hello, mine. It's better than Brian's. His is great too. But do you know that my credit union that I have, you know, two savings, two mortgages that I'm on with my husband, I could not get a loan by myself. They would not give me a loan by myself, myself.
That's terrible.
I was like, what are you talking about? No, your husband has to co-sign. And I said, what the heck? Right. And BMW North America financed my vehicle with a better rate and a better payment. But the biggest thing was that it's in my own name. It's just mine. And that's why I went with them rather than my credit union, for sure, mainly because it was going to be in my name and just how important that is to me. And I mean, if something happened to Brian, I need a financial footprint that's my own, right?
Right.
That doesn't belong to us as a couple or belong to him. And it doesn't mean that I don't adore him, that I don't love him, that I'm not his soulmate, his life partner, his financial partner, his business partner. I'm all of those things. But I feel very strongly that I need to, A, be able to make enough money on my own to provide for myself and my family if something happened to Brian. And or like if he died, or God forbid, what if he had an accident, one of the horses, you know, we have all those dang horses, right? What if one of the horses, if threw him off and he busted his neck and he needed care for the rest of his life, right? I have to be able to support us on my own. This is so, so, so important, I believe. And I'm teaching it to my daughter, who's getting married next year. As a matter of fact, they're coming over for dinner. She and her fiance are coming over for dinner. And to talk about a couple of things, you know, one is their financial future as a couple, and how Brian was saying, how is he going to provide for her? And I said, well, how is she going to provide for him should something happen? I really want both of my daughters to be in full commitment to their husbands, but I don't want them to not be able to support themselves if something happened. And they need to be completely involved in the finances. So they're actually terrified to come tonight. And I heard from a little birdie that Justin has put together a PowerPoint presentation.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my. You're intimidating, lady.
Wow.
We mean business. You know, what is the number one argument among
married
couples? Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Boy, I give Justin credit for doing a PowerPoint presentation that would, in as much as it's funny, you know what? I would like to know. I think that's a legitimate question. And you know, Judy, with traditional roles, a long time ago, you know, it was definitely when your daughter was getting married, it was what, as the father of the daughter, what are you bringing into this marriage? You know, what do you offer my daughter? How are you going to support her? How are you going to take care of her? And that was a traditional role so very long ago where women were, there were arranged marriages as a way to secure a female's future financial security because women didn't have a place in the business world. Well, fast forward, it's 2021 and it is absolutely important and necessary for women to be able to take care of themselves, not as a stance of I'm a woman and I don't need anybody else, but just as you have mentioned, you both have mentioned, life happens. Things happen and the unexpected happens. And so many, unfortunately, I've known some people where those things have happened as well. And then all of a sudden you're left with, if you don't have a full-time job or you don't have a means of support for yourself and your family, if you have kids still living at home, that's devastating. It's life-changing, life-altering. And it is absolutely important for young women of today, both our daughters' age, Judy, to understand starting out at their age, 2021, it's important to have that some degree of financial security and not expect that to come from your husband. That's sort of frosting on the top. And that is, money is that topic of conversation that brings about so many horrible arguments. But hopefully there's a way to balance that so it isn't just his or hers, it becomes ours, but in the best possible situations. You know, I think about that myself right now. If something happened to my husband, he is the main breadwinner. And it would be, I mean, he has life insurance. And I thankfully would be fine. But so many, many aren't. And this is an important topic for, particularly for the young women in their 20s today to understand. It's not enough to just have a part-time job. If you plan on getting married, having kids and a family, it's not enough.
No, and you know what? It doesn't take from the people that want to stay home, from women that want to stay home with their children. I'm not saying that they have to be an equal financial supporter in the family. I'm saying just know what your finances are and make sure that you have access to them if the worst thing happens. Make sure that you, you know, are on that bank account. Make sure that you know if your husband has life insurance. That would have saved this particular woman from what she went through at a late time of her life. You know, that was tragic. There was an article in Inc. magazine that was interesting, and it talked about this, and it gave five little tips to women. And I just want to, you know, kind of go over them real quick. And the first one was to build an emergency fund. And while credit cards can help sometimes, using cash means you can avoid fees and interest, and that emergency fund they suggest should be 6 months' salary can be an ideal goal. It's just that you, you know, protect yourself in case something happens. And the other thing is to insure yourself, to make sure that you have insurance and look at the insurances that you are offered through your job. And sometimes you're offered some basic types and sometimes you're offered some enhanced types. And, you know, make some wise decisions about how you insure yourself to save yourself some major headaches down the road, right? In case something happens, in case you get sick or whatever, there are lots of different insurances that can help with finances. So if you plan ahead, then you'll be ahead of the game. And it's important to stay aware of what's going on with your finances and with your family finances. And the more that women can educate themselves on their financial issues, then, you know, the better off that they'll be when that curveball comes your way. And that's even if you have a financial professional helping you, you know, you still need to not just leave everything in somebody else's hands, but get involved in your own future. And then, you know, women should also be thinking about getting their affairs in order. And I think we've talked about this before, ladies, that it's not a morbid thing. It's that something that you should pre-plan to, you know, what's going to who and how is your money going to be handled? And a lot of times you can put that in a trust, but taking care that these things are done and not waiting until, you know, you're sick or the last minute, and just get that legacy prepared so that your family isn't left in the lurch either. And, you know, just be aware and be knowledgeable about what's happening in your financial life. I just think it's so, so important.
Absolutely. I know with my parents, and I've talked about this before on another show, that they have all of their affairs in order. And when they die, we literally have to show up for the funeral. That's it. It's all we have to do. And I'm feeling very blessed by that. And that should, idealistically, that should be the way that it is with a husband and wife as well. Have everything in a file, whether it's digital or, as my parents have it, literally in a file cabinet on paper. We know where it is. And there's a comfort level in that. And that's very important as well, for me anyway, so that I know where things are. And I don't have to be burdened by that.
Yeah, that's not the time to make decisions, right? When you're in a big crisis, is not the time to have to make those kinds of decisions. And sometimes those decisions don't become the best decisions.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.